1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. I entitled my message this afternoon, Modest Apparel. And this message is somewhat of a continuation of last Sunday morning's message from Matthew 5, 27 through 30. We saw in that message in which Jesus tells us that we are to take drastic measures to mortify sin, particularly in the issue of lust. We are told there, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out. It's through eye gate, as Mr. Bunyan so aptly calls it in his book, The Holy War. It's through eye gate that much mischief begins in the human mind and enters into the human mind. We're told to be so interested and so concerned about the mortification of sin in that passage that we looked at last Sunday morning, Matthew 5, 27 through 30, that we must be willing to cut off right hands, as it were. Even those things which are good in themselves or innocent in themselves, if they lead to sin, if they entice to sin, then they must be parted with. We saw further in that message that we are to be zealous to promote purity and chastity in others by not enticing others to lust. We must be concerned about provoking others to love and to good works. Proper love for neighbor means a proper concern to provoke others to love and to good works. Now, not to go back and re-preach that message, just to start there to take up, but in that message, we speak mostly in generalities, but I feel convicted today to continue that teaching in more particulars. Now, we as a church have taken a stand that one of the things that's important to us is modest dress. In fact, we've stated that on our listing on one of the websites that we're listed on, in addition to putting our doctrinal statement on there, the 1689 Confession of Faith, that we state that we're Calvinistic, evangelistic Calvinists, holding to the 1689 Confession, and we promote homeschooling, modest dress, and biblical roles of men and women. Above all, we desire to glorify God and to make much of Christ. So we've stated publicly that we take a stand on this issue. And so I want to speak in some more particulars on this. There's something about hearing your own pastor read some of these particulars from the Word and hearing it preached from your own pastor that reinforces what you've already read in the Word and the convictions that you already hold, and will help you not only in your own walk, but in provoking others to love and to good works. Some of you in this congregation have already told me that you've had opportunities to speak along these regards to others. Not only do we want to provoke our own congregation to love and to good works, but we want to be able to scripturally help others in provoking them to love and to good works, and taking the gospel and its practical implications to those that we love and those that the Lord will give us opportunities to witness to. Now, today, I will have to speak somewhat plain and pointed, but that is the way the Scriptures speak. Now, I had a dear brother in a church that I pastored one time that I tried. This church never had the practice of reading through the Scriptures like we do here, just starting in Genesis and reading through and not leaving out any of the Bible, of having the whole congregation after a few years of having heard the Bible read in their assembly. And I remember as we were approaching a chapter that was plain and pointed, and I had a brother come to me before the service and said, "Don't read that chapter before the church today. It's too explicit language." Well, the Bible is explicit. the Bible is plain and pointed. And so I may use some plain and pointed terms today, as the Scriptures do. Because we want people to understand exactly what we're talking about. Sometimes when we just lay the foundation, sometimes when we just speak in generalities, somehow the message doesn't sink in like it should. But I'm going to speak somewhat plain and pointed this afternoon and try to drive this into our hearts with the help of the Holy Ghost. I also want to make it clear today, I have selected a text as a beginning point. The main text that I will look at as far as exposition, although we will look at a couple of other places in the Scriptures along these lines, the text that we've selected speaks explicitly to women. So I want to make it clear today that I am addressing in the issue of modest apparel, that I am addressing men and women. I want to make that clear. Although some of our more pointed statements will be concerning women. Regardless of what feminists, liberals, atheists, perverts, and politically correct preachers say, there is a difference in men and women. Regardless of what anybody will say, there is a difference between us. God made the female gender. He wired y'all up one way, and He wired us men folks up another way. And in the Garden of Eden, before the fall, that was just wonderful, and it still is. Whenever it's viewed biblically, and whenever those differences are celebrated biblically, but there is a difference in men and women, regardless of what anybody that's trying to be politically correct may say. Men are more easily tempted to lust visually than women are. Now, that's just the facts. I've talked to my wife. I've heard other godly women. I've overheard them talking. And I'm old enough and have studied enough. I know that there's a difference in the way that the tempter can get to us. And men are more easily enticed through eye gate. Women are not exempt. But men are more prone to it. Men are more prone to being tempted to lust through eye gate. So I make it plain as I can. While I will probably refer more to modest dress concerning women, I am talking to everybody. I'm talking to men and women. It is just as sinful for a man to go out in public dressed immodestly as it is for a woman. And sometimes in this kind of teaching, that's lost somehow or another in the jumble, that it's just as wrong for men and boys to be out in public in short pants as it is for women. And other ways that we expose our bodies, or that people do such things, not we, but the way different ways that people expose their bodies in different stages of undress. But a woman can do more harm by sinful dressing than a man. I think that's witnessed by the nudity of Bathsheba that provoked the lust of King David, not vice versa. The Scriptures give us that sordid, sad example in the Old Testament. So we're talking to everybody. We're talking to men and women, but we just have to state plain and pointedly that it is an issue that in some ways women can entice men more that way than the other way around. Not to say that it's not that women are not exempt from it. So I want to, as we speak more particularly to this subject than we did last Lord's Day. Last Lord's Day we spoke in generalities concerning the need for modest dress so as not to be an object of lust. In that passage we looked at last Lord's Day in Matthew 5:27-30, Jesus said that if a man look upon a woman to lust after her, he's committed adultery already in his heart. And so we notice from that that there's a corresponding command not to provoke lust in others. And so we're continuing with that in more particulars. Now, a passage here, I want to begin by giving a brief exposition of 1 Timothy 2 verses 9 through 10, the passage that we have started out with, and let me read it again, and then I want us to look in detail at some of the words that are in the text. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Now, the first word I want to look at in this passage is the word modest. Women are exhorted here to adorn themselves in modest apparel. The kind of apparel that they're to put on is said to be modest apparel. The word modest here is translated from the Greek word kosmios, and it simply means orderly. It means orderly. It means seemly. Let the women, in like manner that women adorn themselves in seemly apparel, in orderly apparel. And then we have the word adorn. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel. And the word adorn here, it comes from a related Greek word, and it's, of course, the verb form of it, and it's kosmeo, which means to put in proper order. It means to decorate. It means specifically, and I thought this was interesting, the word adorn here, the word kosmeo, that's translated adorn, specifically means, the literal rendering is, to snuff a wick. That is, to like putting out a candle. To snuff a wick. In other words, a woman is to consciously dress as to be in proper order and to not cause disorder. A woman is to dress in such a way as when she walks in the door that every man in the place doesn't turn their heads to look in that kind of disorder. A woman is to dress consciously that way, putting her dress in order. She is to purposefully dress so as to put out the wick of lust that can be ignited in men. That's one of the literal renderings of the word of kosmeo, to snuff a wick, to put out a candle, to put out a fire. A little spark can kindle a great fire, as it did in the case of Bathsheba and David. Now, I mentioned last Lord's Day, David's sin was great and Bathsheba's was small. Yet this sordid sin of adultery, which led to many other sins, started with a spark of the exposing of the human body. And if Bathsheba had been adorning, putting in proper order, so as to snuff out a wick, then that fire would have never got started. The spark never would have got going. If I could use along this line of thinking here, along this line of understanding of the word adorn, to dress so as to snuff out a wick, if I could just speak plain here, that the way men's minds are, and again, God has made the man in such a way that his mind works in this way. But when a woman comes in around men, we might think here that there are candles all around. If a woman is dressed in such a way as to invite men's looks, men's stare, and invite men's lust and entice, it's like a spark to light all of those wicks. But ladies, your desire should be not to light those candles, but to put them out. Not to ever have any flame get started there. Okay? Snuff out a wick. So this is what Paul is exhorting women to consider in their dress, to dress in a seemly way, to put things in order, that they would dress specifically, consciously, directly, in such a way as to be stifling lust rather than encouraging it. Then we have the word shamefacedness here. Now, this is a word probably that the world in particular hates, and it's but it's a word the Holy Spirit saw fit to put in here, and the translators translated it shamefacedness. The Greek word is ahidos, and it means the idea of downcast eyes, bashfulness towards men, modesty or awe towards God. So Paul is saying here that as a woman dresses, she is to dress consciously and purposefully with the idea of bashfulness towards men. That should be a woman's motive in her mind, is not familiarity with men, but bashfulness towards men. Also dressing consciously with modesty and awe towards God. In other words, keeping in mind that when I'm getting ready to go outside my own room, when I'm getting ready to go outside my house, I'm getting ready to go out into public, that I'm dressing before God. Wouldn't that be a good thing for us all to keep in mind? Again, at this particular point, I'll repeat what I said in the introduction, that many things we're saying is speaking to women specifically, but to all of us. And do us all good if in our dress and our general demeanor, we always keep in mind that we're getting dressed for God. I wonder how many preachers, if they really believe that, I wonder how many preachers would be leading their youth groups off on trips, a public mixed swimming together. If they just really had in their minds that God is watching what's going on here and watching the faults of all of us here. I wonder how many of these modern day preachers that have decided that the way to get along with the world and attract more people in the church is to wear Bermuda shorts and tank tops in the pulpit. If they would keep in mind that they're dressing before God, I think that would make a difference in the way they dress, not only for public worship, but all their public being outside in public. So a woman is to dress with shamefacedness. Ahidos, the idea of downcast eyes, bashfulness towards men, and awe towards God. Then we have the word sobriety. And I'm trying the best I can with these Greek words that are, we have the pronunciation for us in Strong's Concordance, and I'm trying the best with them. But the word that's translated sobriety here is the word sophrosune. Sophrosune. And it simply means soundness of mind, sanity, self-control. Now, as you look at the general public and you look at the world, you look at the way they dress, what can you say about that except that it's insane? Now, this text here says that a woman is to dress consciously with an idea, with a motive, with a goal, with an attitude of shamefacedness and sobriety, an attitude of sanity. You know, it used to be that to see a freak show, you had to go to the fair, the circus, to see a freak show. But now all you got to do is stand in the mall or in the Walmart, and you can see a freak show going on around you all the time. And one of the most insane things that you'll see passing through, and you shouldn't, you can't help but notice it, is the increasing amount of nakedness that we're seeing in the public place. And sadly to say, the professing people of God are aping the world rather than setting the standard for the world. I don't know how much further it's going to go before we have open and public nudity right here in the Walmarts and on Main Street, but if it keeps going, it will certainly come to that. And we as the people of God don't need to go insane along with the world. We need to be sane in the way that we dress. Dressing with adorning ourselves with modesty, adorning ourselves with shamefacedness and sobriety. Sanity. Use the good sense that God has given us. Now, I think there's also something in here for those of us who are heads of families. And a man needs to have some sanity in the way that he allows his wife and his daughters to dress. Sometimes our daughters do not understand the gravity of what we're talking about here. And quite frequently, especially younger unmarried women that really don't know much about how men think, sometimes when I have preached out on this particular subject, the word has been put this way. Well, men just ought not to be that way. Men ought not to think that way. And I agree they ought not to. But because of the fall, they do. And fathers, and some of you boys are going to be fathers, all you boys are going to be fathers one day, hopefully. You need to have some sanity about how your wife and your daughters dress, indeed about how you dress yourself, and the example that you set. The only thing I can say about a man, whether he be a deacon or a preacher in the church, a professor of religion, or even just a worldly man that doesn't even know the Lord, all I can say is a man that will let his wife and his daughters go out and parade their bodies before the man, other men, is not showing much sanity. He's showing some form of insanity. But we're not supposed to be like the world. And so Paul says that in like manner that the woman put herself in proper order. Now let's take all these definitions and the underlying thoughts, just put them together and look at what Paul is saying. He's saying that he would have the woman to put in proper order, to decorate herself so as to snuff out a wick in a seemly way with bashfulness towards men and modesty and all towards God with soundness of mind and sanity and self-control. That's what he's saying here. A woman professing godliness. That's the kind of woman that he's speaking to here. Woman professing godliness. A woman professing godliness should be dressed in such a way that it shows outwardly what's in her heart. Some of the antinomians make a big issue that it is only what's in the heart that counts. And this is what those of us that are sometimes called legalists, we deny the charge on the biblical definition of legalism. True legalism is telling men that they can be saved through their works. Legalism is making up rules that the scriptures don't make. Legalism is bringing men and women. Legalism is bringing people under your rules rather than under the law and the authority of God. But standing for righteousness is not legalism. But the antinomians that call us legalists, they'll often say, well, it doesn't matter what's on the outside. It only matters what's in the heart. The real issue is what's in the heart. We vigorously affirm that it is the heart that is the root of false attitude and actions. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh, and we vigorously affirm that ultimately it is an issue of the heart. We equally and vigorously affirm that what you do and how you behave and how you dress reveals much about your heart. Your behavior reveals what's in your heart, what's in your mind, and what you're thinking, and what you love, and what you're concerned about. To be adorned in modest apparel means that a woman is not calling attention to herself, not to her wealth. And this is what some of the antinomians have limited this particular text. Some of the antinomians have said, well, it just simply means that a woman's not to dress showy. She's not to be putting on expensive mink coats and expensive jewelry and that sort of thing. They limit it to that. But I think I've shown you from the word meanings, the meanings of these words, the brief word study that we did, you can see that it goes much further and much deeper than that. It really includes modesty, as we've talked about. But a woman is to dress in such a way as to not call attention to herself. Not to her wealth, if she has any. Not to her social standing, if she claims some. And certainly not to her sexual parts. I must speak plainly. Ladies, you do not have to show much of your legs to attract the glances of men. You do not have to reveal much of your bosom to draw the eyes of men to yourself. You do not have to reveal much of your feminine form by tight-fitting dresses to have men looking in ungodly ways. Now, I speak plainly, but I'm telling you the truth. I'm speaking today out of love. I hope I've lived before you and preached in such a way and prayed with you in such a way that you know how much I love you as the people of God and the people that the Lord has appointed me to under-shepherd. I speak plainly because I love you. I speak plainly because I want this to resonate in our hearts and for all of us to have a proper biblical concern and attitude about how we dress. Again, we're speaking to the whole congregation, men and women, but we're looking at this somewhat through the eyes of 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10, which speaks to women in particular. Now, secondly, I want us to notice briefly here the antithesis of modest apparel. What the Bible calls the attire of an harlot. Look with me in Proverbs 7 and verse 10. In Proverbs chapter 7, verse 10. I will just say that it would do you young men good to read this 7th chapter of Proverbs fairly often. In fact, it would do all men good to read this 7th chapter of Proverbs pretty often, because in this chapter, Solomon speaks plainly to his son in warning him against getting involved in sexual sins. I'm not going to read this whole chapter here, but we'll just have to state again that fornication, adultery, is a sure road to hell. We'll just say it that way. Proverbs 7, verse 10, "And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart." Now, while on the one hand, in 1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10, women profess, you have the woman that's professing godliness, the woman who professes to be a Christian, the woman who professes to love the Lord, a woman professing godliness. That's the kind of woman that all of you are. You're professing godliness. And then he says how such a woman ought to dress: with shamefacedness, with sobriety, with sanity, with all the things we just said, and not to repeat any of that. But then here in Proverbs 7, verse 10, we have a different kind of woman. A woman who has on the attire of a harlot. Now, how does a harlot dress? A harlot dresses intentionally to draw attention to her body. Some of our antinomian friends, if I can call them friends, some of the antinomians have taken the position that as long as a person is not completely nude, that somehow everything's all right, as long as they're not completely nude. The harlot doesn't get out and go down the street completely nude. I couldn't help but hear on the news this week a reference to the problem that the city of Jackson is presently having with prostitution. And those harlots that are in those parts of town where they're having problems with that, they don't get out and walk up and down the street nude. But they dress in such a way as to provoke people's attention, particularly men, the men that they want to be their sordid customers. The harlot dresses to entice, but the woman professing godliness is to dress, so as to cover. Not to entice, but to put out the wick. Put out the wick of passions. Put out the wick of lust. The harlot dresses in such as a way to light the flame. To light the wick. To light the candle. Now I want to tell you something here. To make a point. The last time that I gave blood at Mississippi Blood Services, and I do that from time to time whenever somebody is in need of blood. I'm not really a regular donor, but pretty often I am called upon to give blood. And the last time I was up there, and you know now because of AIDS and all the sexual transmitted diseases, when you go to give blood, they're going to ask you a lot of questions that, if you've got any decency at all, it should make you blush, the questions that they're going to ask you. And I remember this particular time, it was a woman that was asking me these questions, and I guess she could see I was blushing, and then she kind of got flustered. She said, I have to ask these questions. It's the rules and it's the law. But here's the point I want to tell you. One of the things they ask a man, I don't know what they ask women, one of the things they ask a man before he gives blood: have you had dealings with a prostitute? They ask you that. They ask you plainly that. Any man with any decency ought to blush at a woman even saying such a thing in his presence. They give you a little pamphlet, and it tells you people that can't give blood. And this is one of the things it says. If you have consorted with a prostitute and you're not eligible to give blood, and on the front of this little paper, it's got a picture of a man approaching a harlot. And this harlot, she's not completely nude, but you know how she's dressed? She has a skirt just above her knees and a strapless dress, a tight-fitting dress that shows her form, a dress not unlike many I've seen women wearing to church. And so, not in this place, but in places I've been. Now, make a point here. The world knows what the attire of a harlot is. Mississippi Blood Services, to make that little pamphlet, they know what the attire of a harlot is. But somehow or another, antinomian preachers and politically correct preachers and modern-day churchmen, they make out like they don't know what the attire of a harlot is. Oh, you mean you're saying that our women are dressed indecently just because they wear mini skirts or just because they... I'm telling you that the scriptures say that the attire of a harlot is to attract the glance of a man to her body. That's the way a harlot intentionally dresses. The woman professing godliness dresses to honor God and promote chastity in those around her, not the attire of a harlot. Your attire can provoke to lust, or it can provoke to love and good works. And so the woman is professing godliness, and the man, we should be dressing in such a way as to provoke to love and to good works. That should be our motive in dealing with others and around them. Concern for others and love of neighbor mandates that we seek not only purity and chastity in our own selves, but that we promote it in others, provoking to love and to good works in the matter of sexual purity. Your attire can provoke others to purity of mind. You can dress in such a way as to provoke people to purity of mind. Now, when I behold a woman that's dressed modestly and adorned in the spirit of what we just read in 1 Timothy 2:9, that cheers my heart in such a way as it provokes pure thoughts in my mind. We can dress that. We can dress in such a way as to provoke pure thoughts. Your attire can provoke others to dress modest themselves. We can be an encouragement to others in this matter. So we make a contrast. The scriptures make a plain and pointed contrast, an antithesis between modest apparel and the attire of an harlot. For the attire of an harlot is to intentionally stir the lusts of men, but the modest apparel of a woman professing godliness is to provoke her brothers in Christ to love and to good works. Now you sisters, you ought to have such a concern for us men folks that you're wanting to provoke us to love and to good works in your general demeanor, in everything that you do, including your dress. Now, thirdly, I want us to show just a little bit in the scriptures concerning the shame of nakedness. The shame of nakedness. I want you to consider, first of all those passages. I'm not going to go back and read any of those, but it hasn't been too far back since we read through Leviticus. And I want you to recall in your minds all of those verses in Leviticus chapter 18 and in chapter 20 in which God pronounces His judgment upon sexual sins. And in what is the word that is used in all of those things? Nakedness. Invariably is used. Comes up. What is God saying? He's saying that it's a shame to begin the road to sinful behavior through nakedness and various degrees of it. Consider the shame of Noah's nakedness. You remember after the flood back in the book of Genesis? After the flood, Noah came out of the ark, became a husbandman, planted a vineyard, and made wine, drank to excess, and became drunk. And he was in his tent naked. to shame. Shameful picture here. Here's the patriarch of, at this time, the patriarch of the whole human race that's still left alive. And here he is roving around in his tent, drunk, shamefully naked. And you remember how that Ham, you remember how what it says about Ham? And through that, the curse that came upon that land. But what did Japheth and Shem do? Japheth and Shem took a garment and went backwards to cover the nakedness of the father. There's a lot in that lesson there. One lesson is that you don't have to broadcast all the sins of your parents. You don't have you can do what you can to cover up the shame of dishonorable parents. This is what Shem and Japheth did. Whereas Ham sought to broadcast it. But still you have the picture there of shame of Noah naked before his family and naked in a shameful way. Again, the shame there. Consider Exodus, in Exodus chapter 20, verse 26. I want to turn and read that verse. I think it will help enforce this in our minds. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 26, the Lord gave this commandment to Moses. He said, "Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon." God was so concerned about the modesty of his people that he even said, "Take such care as to not put the altar in an elevated place with steps up to it, that you would go that by going up to it, that even in a good thing like in your religious exercises, that you'd expose your nakedness." That's how concerned God is about our modesty. That he said, even in the structure of this altar and the ascent to it and the way you get to it, to be structured in such a way as to not take a chance on exposing yourself. So God's Word says that nakedness is a shame. God's Word says that there's a difference in the attire of a harlot and the modest attire of a woman professing godliness. May the Lord help us to provoke one another to love and good works through modest dress. Let's stand for closing hymn.